Okay, the second question is, when did you learn English?
English.
Assuming that it's your second language,
yes.
Thank you.
I'm going to be 72 now, and my father and that generation were the first little children to go to school. And it was a little before my father's birth, the white man came, they were the school teachers. You start teaching our people, the we don't speak their language. So that time, father was growing up, we began to, English school teachers began to teach the Eskimo children those words they speak. So we just began to learn them a little bit English. To so ships come, the ships come, and there are white people speak English to them, and those speaking English. Oh, I'm a man, something like that. They're learning. By the time I went to school, and during the 1930s, we began to speak English. More. That among ourselves, to the visitors and school teachers, we can speak English to them, but we all speak Eskimo at home yet, but now we can speak like this, like me. Some of them still don't speak English yet. My father and my mother, they married like Eskimos. My father worked for my mother's people working there with her seat, so they were married. They moved to my father's house. My father was, his own father had died at the sea, but he has a house. In that house, some lot of time, he go to the other end of the island and trap foxes. Come back with the fox skins he brought out in there. I have my grandfather's house. That was his house with walrus high top, like I talk about. He built another house here, lumber house. He built a big one with upstairs and windows. And we live in that. And we still have that little walrus high top one. Then we were living in this kind of house more. When we were in that house with walrus high top, we have a little room in there, and the lamps are always trimmed nice. We would go to bed with a log. We don't have trees. Driftwood come from the sea, and we get them from the places at the log over there is reindeer, walrus high, as I told Buffalo. And when we camp, there be some key people over them and give us something to eat. By that time, we have pilot bread, so they like to give us this tea and sugar. And the little room, we always have walrus meat for everyday food. Walruses were always hunted for that time. We have walrus meat in summertime. It's the skins of the meat into a round thing and drop them in. People hunt those. They go bird hunting at the mountain. Eat that tea and sugar. Tea and bread, pilot bread. We like that pilot bread that ships brought. So we go in time, we always have some kind of meat, walrus meat. They always take us to the mountain in summertime. We get water. There's a village like this mountain there. There was a well here where we go. Fill our buckets and take them home like that many times as a child. I always carry water. In the little well, and our My aunt mother was always busy with her little children at that time, my younger brothers and sisters. They used to, we had them that time, tents, white man's tent, and we were building a great big building with windows and upstairs and built like white man. No reindeer skin in the inside either, but in the other house we have building and reindeer skin in there, reindeer skin room. And just on the outside when we clean that, they poured the walrus hide square like tent, and so it's there is busy in there, and grandma used to take us to the mountain, and there are green things that grew, some green things we eat, some we don't. There were a lot of them, and you would have a little children, little girls, like, they like to have little girls gather some. And when they get home, see what she got, and the uncles like to eat them, to make them. We used to gather a lot of them, little children carry little girls, cut them like this. Women have little ulu, they call ula in our people, knife, and they cut them. Climbing the mountain and gather a lot of those green things to take home for winter. Put them in great big seal skins, we call poke. There's a lot of them when that time already the school teachers were here. You know, and over there too, they take those green things for winter. Together and put the whale's shoulder bone over it and a rock. Keep them down there like that. And green things we got in the Siberian, Lake Siberian way. There at Gamble, there's a mountain in the lake. Over here when we go, the little blackberries, we call them Bahuna. Salmon berries, the pink ones. So we take them up and just take them home. They places just lots of salmon there. We would just take them up. I know one time we took a great big deal of skin of it for winter. We call them akalsik. As soon as we bring them home, we eat them like that too. And then later on, we boil them with flour and sugar and eat them like that. But in one point, and we climb up there to the meat racks up there, and there they pose. Many times they have it, and they saw, use a little saw to cut a great big piece, and then they put it all, put it up, and take down what there is and take home. And then there's a little scraper and scrape them fine. And when there's a whole lot of salmon berries, frozen salmon berries, they work them out in a cold room so they won't thaw. They put the seal oil, later on they put sugar and shortening, and then just mix it with big squares. Time to get them down, cut squares of them, bring some, and good to eat. And then.
So sometimes.
Top there, we open a cut a plate and take them out, and all the always from there. And that skin you can use it for macrapsin. It colors that after a year of in plants we gather too. It looks green.
Oh.
And it's got color. And we use it.
It colors them too.
Yeah.
Like pink.
Yeah. We by that time we have sugar and shortening, so we always
you guys have lots of reindeer before?
We never used to have reindeer on the island until now, little before I was born. Sylvan Jackson, they brought some few reindeer to our island, and they began to have reindeer camps and good building times and soot fats for mixture. Melt them thick fat from the reindeer. We cut them When it's all, put them over fire until a lot of it turn into oil and take them down. And with those green things we pick, use it like a lard or make paste and oil there, and only them too, and cut them, eating with them with our meat. That fat, that mixture, make it into a smooth mixture where we can cut it in oil there too. We like to eat them with the meat.
Freeze them. Does anybody have any questions regarding Barry? If you say so, then we'll.
When the first snow comes in October and November, snow begin to come. As the white, clean white snow comes in there, they would make the reindeer mixture, reindeer fat, cut it fine and melt it, and bring some clean snow in. And that reindeer fat, that we put some oil, and later on we put sugar too, a shortening, and put that snow and stir it good. And which make it cold, snow can make it good and mixed. So it can be made round like that. And after put away, before that you couldn't find it because it's soft and oily.
So does the snow make the fat?
Yeah, snow makes them hot. I would like the white snow to eat. After cold water can make them thicken fast. Snow thicken them, make them not oily or runny. They can stay like that when they put that down.
Either with blackberries, but salmon berries, we can fill the bigger seal skin. Some, I know big seal skin with them. We don't fish too much. We have a side of the island where we hardly go there. There are some people that have camps there, but they don't go too much. But they have fishing places where they fishing nets and they fish salmon. And they found their eggs, and they bring home not too much of them. So they like to give the important to honor the people that in their tribe, like elders, and they can sometimes when the time comes for them to celebrate something, or maybe someone got a polar bear, they can cut those. They can sit. Bring some foods to the elders. So sometimes they bring salmon eggs mixture. Very scarce food there. And salmon eggs, sometimes they put them in a container of walrus intestine too. They put them in on their stomach for later use. After they dry those walrus stomach, fixed up, cleaned and dried, can be used for like salmon eggs and berries and oil and things that can put them away. So they will, salmon eggs are put like this and they take them out right away too. Here on the platter, like a wooden platter, put the salmon eggs just killed from the rivers in summertime. And they chop them, and they put little oil, just with their hand and put some more oil until the mixture got thick. And in an hour or so, they're just thick. So they serve them at meal time with fish, boiled fish, that mixture of salmon eggs worked with oil. Sometimes they put little berries, blackberries. No salmon berries there. Well, maybe once in a while they put them. But that is served not too much at Gambo. But the other side where it's boil, they have more of those fish.
What do you call that when you pick? Well, called.
I.
That kind of a good with seven eggs.
This one, we call it slivavak. And we call it sometimes when we have put salmon meat boiled and put it in that egg mixture, meats too. We call it kamakakak. Kamakakak is when we put berries in that salmon egg mixture. When we put berries, and kamakakak. And it's a whole thing is called slivavak. Slivak is salmon eggs. They can make mixture.
Do you ever make a gouda with fish livers? Cooked fish liver?
I never heard of it. Maybe they do. There were some people that live passing the cliffs there. They call it Bourg-Lamed. Mine is Aymara, but they'll try, different try. Bourg-Lamed may have more fish. Maybe they fix them more fish mixture. I never heard of their with a liver. Maybe they do. They boil and mix them with a fish egg mixture.
When are all those berries available?
Huh?
When are the berries available?
They grew in August. We have green things and then we begin to see little berries growing. And we don't get them yet. September, they're good and ripe, just about freezing. And we gather them, those berries. Some, let's see. What do we call that? Salmon berries? And little blackberries. Yeah, those little blackberries until even it's frozen in November, December, we could gather them in a frozen ground when we walk in. And when the snow, we could see them just in the winter time too, frozen, little blackberries. But salmon berries have gone away. They're freezing, they have fallen. Before that, we be sure and gather them and put them in containers like that and put them up. So get them down and chop them and put oil and sugar and mixture like that. We use them as food whole year. Akavzik, we call those salmon berries.
How old are the girls when they're expected to get married and the boys, like today?
Yeah, their girls are grown up and maybe when they're around 18 years old, but during that time we never write their ages when they were born. We know what people many times remember their children when they were born, by when, so, like something happened that time, when someone had a whale or or something like that spring that girl was born like that. So the girl feel grown up, and they begin to ask for their son, and the young men about 20 something there, so they can get out and work and help with a lot of hunters, about 20, and the young girls be 18 around that time.
So, like for a drum, it's mostly when they get mature, even though they're young, when they mature early, they get married early.
Mm-hmm.
When they start
when they
to
mature.
Think and do things good with their hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're more responsible.
Yeah, when they're mature, young men too, and young girls, when they sew, when they can sew, and women sew a lot, making skins and tan them and sew them nice, and they are very careless ways too when they don't pay attention. So those girls that are good and careful, they usually ask for that kind of girl for their sons to be their wife.
It's like almost always the girls are expected to know how to sew and care for animals and skins. And their readiness is judged by how well they've advanced in that situation. So we call them Munakalumi, the ones that are good in doing what they can do. But you can also marry even your moon knight, even though your work is still sloppy, but at least you're trying, you know. So that's how they measure if they can actually make items like parkas and matlaks and stuff like that. How did the girls practice how to make matlaks when they're young?
Little girls and bigger girls.
We used to have little dolls that we used to use in our village called the Inuwa.
Yeah.
That's how they used to let us practice cutting little matlaks and making little matlaks and pastas.
Yeah.
And that's how they used to train us.
Women always teach their little girls how to sew. And when they don't, the elders will look at them. They don't want to be looked at as lazy people, so they like to teach their little girls just how to sew and make dolls and how to make matlaks and do skin cleaning and be sure that young guys are taken out to hunt for seals. When they don't go, they don't like it. They must get out on the ice and learn to be out there, and because there are seals out there, as soon as one is brought home, they like that, there will be happiness. And for great big animals, whales have a great feeling for people, because they must learn how to put away meats, and if they don't care, the carelessness is that we must take care of the meats. People are looked at lazy. They never want to be lazy.
What about now in your village? Do the young girls still learn how to sew and the young boys go out on the ice?
Not too much with our skins in them, but still they still do. But they want to go to school, and schools were looked at. They're going to school was looked. Many people, elders, didn't like that. They just didn't like them. They must learn to sew. And here she is. She's gone away a long time. She's gone to school. But later on, they begin to like. They even have their children go to school. and high school too, because they come home and they become like store manager or other payments they bring home to their folks and pay their electricity and things like that. And then they like it now. They don't go so too much anymore, but we still do. And we send our skins to be tanned and come back all tanned by machines, and we used to tan them ourselves a lot. Until since there's power, there's something to do, we just go for that. Modern powers.
When you were going away for school, when you were younger, did the elders used to think that was not a good thing to do for you?
Elders used to not like it. They like, oh, what foolishness the girls are doing now. They're not home. They're out.
Are the ones that don't own their own things. They're described like that.
Yeah, wise people. Wise and a foolish woman, they don't use this finger.
So when life was based upon subsistence, totally on subsistence, without any cash economy or modern education, anybody that did not know how to take care of an animal, hunt, so was regarded to be careless. But everybody had a unified understanding that that was what life is and that's the purpose of life for them. And for young kids, it was like a shame if you did not even know how to do anything. Even from the beginning, they teach you minimal things like learning how to wash dishes or to comb your own hair or to go get water. Those are the, you know, remedial jobs. The most advanced jobs would be like learning how to cut the pattern of a maklak would be a start. Learning how to cut the pattern of a kasbak would be a start. Learning how to use your hand measurement. Your hands and your body measurements were very important. People knew the length of their feet through their hands. I mean, this is for a man's foot. You know, the measurements were, I think they've taken care of their body so much, or they have that consciousness of their visual measurements down so good that they knew how to, you know, like this is the size of our waist. We all know that. So when I go to a store, I always go like this to measure my waist because they say this is the width of your waist. For my feet, it would be like this because my size is 7. I just know that because that's the way they taught us. You always have to measure your body with your hands and your visual observation. So, the men with longer feet would be an extra flip over. For a woman's qasbak, you begin to do, they train you well to use your visual observation so well that when you see a man and you let him turn around, you can right there say, well, this is going to be the size of the pattern for their qasbak. Because you learn that from the early age, and as you grow older, you just know how to do it. It comes with life practice. So that's how they used to train us when we made pastoks and makhlaks and stuff like that, is to use our hand measurements all the time and our visual observation. So like when I order makhlaks for my mom, when an unknown person that she's never met orders a pair of makhlaks, I'll say, well, he weighs 200 pounds, his leg is about this tall, and here's his feet size. And they're about this width. She do know what size to make. Because of practice, you know. I'll say, well, he's a little bit shorter than my brother Willie, and he's fatter than my brother Mark. Mark is a pattern, so if he's fatter, then he must be extra heavy. And if he's as tall as my tallest brother, then he must be extra tall this way. So just by visual observation, you begin to learn, you know, when they do that. So a lot of times she'll just know what size to make by my request, because that's the way we were taught. So the feet, you know, the length and size and width.
From my small knowledge of Yupik language, that's also reflected in languages, that precision of direction, of referring to to things that are visible, not visible, or toward this direction, toward that direction. It seems like it's all through the culture, both in language and visual.
Yeah. It's because of oral history we've accumulated a lot of descriptive instances, like snow. And think in Inupiaq, they have 200 different words for snow, different types of snow. In English, we have one.
And then modifiers.
Yeah, and then stuff like that. And for demonstratives, in Yupik anyways, we have lots of demonstratives, like, the one outside the house that I cannot see that is moving, you can say that. The one that I can hear outside the house, but in the other, you know, we've developed this language system that we're able to pick up words and know what they mean that have lots of different definitions, whereas in English you can't, you know. For me to say the one outside that I cannot see that is moving, I cannot say that in one word in English. Or the one up there that is still, or the one up there that is moving, or the one up there that I cannot see that is on the other side. So our language system has developed so fine because of our traditional oral history, that we have developed that vocabulary that have allowed us to build such big, large amount of words for such things as snow, everyday life that we encounter.
I was wondering about people that are handicapped or retarded,
yes,
or and how they fit into the community when they can't do the traditional roles, and how are they viewed by village and community?
Can you answer that?
I'm just thinking about it.
Yeah,
when handicap.
Like, can you give for example of what kind of handicap?
I'm somebody who has physical disabilities that can't, you know, can't go out, and if it's a male or hunt, you know, or a woman, she can't sew, or someone that maybe has learning disabilities and just doesn't have any ability.
There are relatives that help them and take them to their homes, and or else that those people will be, other people will talk about them like not wise when they don't take care of people like that. So people when like to be known as good people, they like to take care of the handicapped. They always like to either take something to them or bring them to their house and take care of them. And people will trust those kind of people, good. And they like to look at the wise people. Foolish people, they don't like them. Those who have poor clothing because they're lazy. They like to be seen not lazy. there are lazy people out there and not wise. Many times are told in our stories. They like to talk about good and bad.
That's one of the social laws, is to love everybody and to take care of everyone. To clarify that a little bit earlier, I said that visual observation is very important. And that also goes for social structure. The visual observation of the extended family, of the family in the village, and plus the community as a whole, are looked upon as a tunnel, like a visual observation. And when people are told such and such laws and rules and regulations, like social norms, expected social norms, for example, if they are not followed, then they're sort of like an outcast. Like, somebody is not doing that. And you don't want for your family name to have that attitude or to have that image from the outside view. So you do all your best, no matter you if you like it or not. If you want to keep your family line in order, your family name, your village name, your community attitude, you have to sort of like do all the expected. Which is hard to define because those are unwritten laws, you know, just like we have social laws. We shouldn't hit our neighbors. We should take care of our neighbors.
So the handicapped person isn't looked down upon?
Not generally. Like she said, you're not supposed to, or else you will be regarded as an outcast or somebody that is not following the rules. My visual observation of some of the handicapped people, like when they're blind, they're very good with their hands and with their ears. Our traditional method of learning is listening and watching, observing and trying, hands on things. There was a story that I heard from my dad of a blind man in the neighboring village. He was there one time when the electricity went out. But this man, the blind man, has played around with like modern machinery, like snow machine. He has played around with them enough that he can undo the whole thing and put it together and know where he put each item after which item, and there's like hundreds of pieces. And my dad said, this man was working in the porch one day. He was visiting a village nearby, and the lights went out. And this blind man kept working. I mean, it didn't matter for him that the lights went out, but he kept doing his job. And he said that when somebody moves a little piece, even 2 inches over that way, he'll know that it's not there. He'll remember. They built this keen memory ability to capture everything in their mind so strongly that this goes along with the oral history. You have to listen in order to know what's going on, or in order to be able to tell it to another person correctly. So there are people that are trained to listen once, and they can recite the story to their neighbor from the beginning to the end. And some are like hours long. And even the dance songs, they have like 5 different parts. People that can listen clearly, think about it, and recite it to the other people. When they have acquired that level of ability, then there are people that have real strong keen, real strong sense of memory. Very like picture, you know, click, click, and it goes out. I wish I had that ability. But anyways, my dad used to always tell us about that blind man that did the whole thing. Oh, you know, he undid the whole thing, the lights went out, he was still working and put it all together. So my observation has been that some of the people that would be regarded handicapped in cities are more like they have special gifts. You know, they're really good with machinery, the ones I know, they're really good with other things that other people, normal people, can't do. You know, like having real good memory or really good observation, abilities to do things with their hands. So.
Yeah, just like that.
At least I haven't heard of to this day of anybody that has been not taken care of because of being handled. And even if they're mentally kind of like a little bit off, their families treat them just like any other children of theirs. You know, they get them clothed well and they feed them well and they take them around. There's this one man from Tununuk who's just like in public, he'll start screaming and making noise, you know, like during dance festivals. But his mom always took him. She never left him at home. Everybody accepted it as part of social life. And he'll start blurting out and he'll start screaming and everybody will nicely go to him. Set him aside for a little while, calm him down, say it's okay. You don't have to start screaming because there's hundreds of people in front of you. That's just part of life, you know. So we accept it as a whole. I mean, they don't send them to ATI or wherever just because they break down and do that. So it's just expected social responsibility too, and understood as a group that there are some people like that that have disabilities or have problems, but we have to deal with together.
Is there any like personal responsibility that's assigned? Like, I know in some places, if you're lazy, that's like, she talks about being lazy. You can't afford to be lazy in our society, you know? Or in their society, because you have to survive, you know, to subsist. So people that are lazy, they think by giving them more work and staying busy is a way to overcome it. I don't know if I'm explaining it. Being having difficulties in the States is more. It's more of a luxury, whereas you can't afford to be that way in a lot of indigenous populations. So sometimes having those sort of problems is looked at as if you would just stay busy and do the thing you're supposed to do to subsist, that you could overcome these types of problems. So giving more work will make the person better, is how, from my experience, it's been seen in some other cultures.
But we also have, you know, in urban areas, we also have these street people that don't want to work, or people that depend on welfare just because they don't want to get out and train themselves. You know, it's sort of a similar, I see what you're getting.
But you can't afford to do that.
In those cases, the thing that I've seen in the past, not today, but in the past, is that they would send that person, the person that does not listen, to the group of elders for like a counseling or a big meeting that would try and shake them up. But not everybody works out like everybody wants them to. And it's just a social problem that, you know, is like.
Yeah. The elders like to pass on something important to the younger generation. They, many times they like to find a way to make them understand and talk to them. Now they like it with the schools and they like that because schools have wonderful things for doing things people do. Like me, I like to, so I'm so happy to write legends because they have meaning. They mean for life. doing things wisely or there's some foolishness. I had Father Paul radio station read my Eskimo stories. I like to read them.
So you have a good week next week. You will have students sitting here, and we'll leave for now. And did everybody spend any extra time? I want her to be able to, you know, not say that she's